The following message is brought to you by Mark Maurer, President, National Federation of the Blind, 200 East Wells Street at Jernigan Place, Baltimore, Maryland, 21230.
Greetings, fellow Federationists. This is Tuesday, October 1st, 2013, and presidential release number 421. Jesse and Mary Jo Hartle tell us that Jesse Hartle IV was born on September 18th, weighing a little bit more than 9 pounds, measuring, as I am told, 21 inches in length. I haven't seen Jesse Hartle, who usually works around here, or Mary Jo Hartle since the birth of Jesse Hartle IV. I'm told that everything's going well, but I haven't seen Jesse Hartle IV or had the joy of meeting him. And I'm all for Jesse and Mary Jo to have a new Hartle around the place. It is delightful to let you know about the birth of Jesse Hartle IV. Jim Antonacci, who is president of the National Federation of the Blind of Pennsylvania, tells us, I'm sorry to have to tell you, that his mother died on September 12th. This is adding to the sadness in the Antonacci household, as Jim Antonacci's father died in July. I urge you to keep Jim Antonacci and his family members in your prayers. This, of course, is the 1st of October, and the government has been tinkering with shutting down, as undoubtedly you've heard on television or on radio. And what exactly this is going to mean for the United States, we don't yet know. There is a lot of talk about how the shutdown will be of brief duration, although there are many who speculate that it could be longer. We are conducting some programs with federal government money, and at the moment we believe that we will not be getting any money from those programs for a time, and we don't know what the result will be. We have our program with the Library of Congress to do Braille certification, and we have other programs at the Library of Congress. I was told that the Braille and audio reading download service of the National Library Service was announcing that it would be closed, and then I was told that it was announcing that it was not going to be closed, so I don't know whether it's going to be closed. In other words, there's a good deal of speculation, and I imagine we'll get through this. There are some who remember the last time the government shut down, and it was all very exciting, but it didn't last very long, so we'll see how long this one lasts. I have a number of announcements here. Here's one called Bid for Equality. This year, the National Federation of the Blind is hosting our first annual Bid for Equality online auction beginning on Black Friday, November 29th, the day after Thanksgiving of 2013, and concluding on Giving Tuesday, which is December 3rd, 2013. The items include paintings, gift baskets, with interesting state-specific items in them, helicopter and boat tours, and weekend getaways. What a great way to show the very special people that are in your life that you care while supporting the work of the National Federation of the Blind at the same time. Your bid counts. In order for the auction to reach its fullest potential, we need our members to help with the auction. Inform your network of friends and family. Let your acquaintances know of our Bid for Equality online auction and encourage them to participate. Spread the word. If you would like more information or if you have questions about our online auction, you can get a hold of Ilana Posner, who is working here and has for a few months now. Her number is 410-659-9314, extension 2283, or you can send an email to iposner@nfb.org. The future is in your bid. We appreciate your support. Please help with the online auction. Here's one from the Jernigan Institute. Mark Riccobono offers this one. Meet the Blind Month is underway. We know your preparation and hard work will pay off. Please remember to send your event information and fundraising updates to Ilana Posner at iposner@nfb.org. All events and fundraising totals must be submitted by Thursday, October 31, 2013, at 5 p.m. Eastern Time to be considered for either of the challenges. We would like to acknowledge and congratulate those affiliates and chapters that have confirmed both their team names and their pledges. They are, in order of pledge amount, number one, Oklahoma with 2013, Maryland with 2013, Virginia with 2013, number four, Louisiana with $1,500, number five, Missouri with $1,200.01, number six, New Jersey with $1,200 even. Number seven, Mississippi with $1,000. Number eight, Tennessee with $750. Number nine, Washington with $500. Number 10, the NFB of Illinois Chicago chapter with $200. With the affiliates that have pledged thus far, we are just over 19% of the way toward our goal of $62,403. We are counting on the support of every affiliate to assist us in reaching that goal. If you have questions or if you would like to provide your team name and pledge, please contact Ilana Posner at 410-659-9314, extension 2283, or, as I've said twice so far, iposner@nfb.org. This is for Meet the Blind Month. Now we have some information about the Workforce Investment Act. That piece of legislation which has been drafted includes the Rehabilitation Act, and the Rehabilitation Act currently has a piece in it which says that minimum wage is not guaranteed in rehabilitation. In fact, it describes methods for paying those who are rehabilitation clients sub-minimum wage payments as part of the rehabilitation process, which I regard as a reprehensible matter. Here is John Paray to talk to us about the Workforce Investment Act and what we need to do on that.
Thank you, Dr. Maurer. And hello, fellow Federationists. As Dr. Maurer mentioned, the Workforce Investment Act was recently reported out of the HELP Committee and will soon come to the Senate floor for a vote. The National Federation of the Blind, along with numerous other organizations, are absolutely opposed to Section 511 of the Workforce Investment Act Title V, which includes the Rehabilitation Act, and we are also absolutely opposed with the part of the bill that would move RSA, which is the Rehabilitation Services Administration, from the Department of Education to the Department of Labor. You have been doing a good job contacting your senators and urging them to strike Section 511 and to remove the language that would move the RSA from the Department of Education to the Department of Labor. It's important that you continue to make these calls. For everyone, to call your senator, we need to call all 100 senators and continue to urge them to repeal Section 511 and to remove the language associated with the RSA move. If you have any questions related to this, please contact Anil Lewis at 410-659-9314. We have also been using this opportunity to educate members of Congress about the Fair Wages for Workers with Disabilities Act, H.R. 831, over in the House. We are up to 41 co-sponsors, and recently, Kathy McMorris Rogers, one of the most senior Republicans in the House, has agreed to co-sponsor the bill. We have over 60 organizations that support our work to create equality for workers with disabilities. Please contact your member in the House of Representatives and urge them to co-sponsor H.R. 831. With your help and working together, we can get H.R. 831 in the House passed, and we can stop the detrimental portions of the Workforce Investment Act. Thank you, Dr. Maurer.
Thank you, John. I appreciate your thought that we should oppose this Section 511 of the Rehabilitation Act, which is contained in the Workforce Investment Act. I have a comment about this. That is, the people in Congress are expected to be representatives of those who sent them to work in Congress. And I know of no disabled individual who is out there representing an organization of disabled individuals trying to get subminimum wages worked into the Rehabilitation Act. In fact, every organization that we've had any contact with at all is trying to get this piece out of the Rehabilitation Act, and yet the members of the Senate are not paying attention. The members of the Congress seem to think that they know more about disability than we do, who feel it and work with it and know about it and work on it every day. Tell them that we don't want this in the law, that this is a bad idea, that this is a thing that's going to do harm, that this is a thing that's going to roll back the opportunities for disabled Americans, that this is a thing that's going to make it harder to get to work in a reasonable fashion with reasonable understanding that you can make your way in the world. In other words, make all the arguments we usually make and tell them that there is nobody out there who wants this except the people who are promoting the idea that they get to get a lot of money managing businesses that use the wages of people who are getting the subminimum wages to help to build the opportunity for them to get 6- and 7-figure incomes. Make it clear that the managers of the shops who exploit disabled people are the ones who want this and nobody else. Now, I have here a press release which was issued on September 12. There's been a lot of talk about whether or not the Second Amendment applies to everybody or just able-bodied people. In other words, a discussion has occurred about whether blind people should be permitted to own firearms. The National Federation of the Blind has an opinion about this, which is to say that we should not make two classes of individuals in the United States. Are guns dangerous pieces of equipment? Of course they are. People get hurt with them all the time. If it's a good idea for some people to have them, is it a good idea to prohibit blind people from having them? We think not. We think blind people have the same kind of judgment that other people have, and we think equality should apply even sometimes when it is a an argument involving weapons that people regard as dangerous. They are dangerous, but we have as much judgment in owning them as other people do, and we should not be segregated out to be those who lead the charge on not having them available to us when everybody else does. In fact, if you look at the statistics, the vast majority of people who get hurt with guns aren't blind people, so you can't demonstrate that blind people are more dangerous with them than others. This is about what the press release said. Michael Barber was on television because he decided that he shouldn't be prohibited from having a firearm if other people can have them, and he went to buy one, and he said if somebody wanted to watch him do so, they could do it. This caused a lot of people to say, why, Michael Barber's dangerous, you know. I don't know why he should have one of these things. On the other hand, so far as I know, he's never hurt anybody with them. And consequently, he has the same kinds of rights that other people do, and that's what happened in this press release. Lauren McLarney, who works on our legislative staff, has some announcements here. It says, the National Federation of the Blind, along with more than 20 other organizations representing persons with print disabilities, submitted comments opposing a petition which has been filed by a coalition of e-reader manufacturers saying that the Federal Communications Commission should waive the provisions of the law which say that readers should be accessible under the 21st Century Communications and Visual Accessibility Act. They argued that readers are designed for reading and not for communication, and they say that the law says that advanced communication services are covered by the act, but ordinary reading is not. And why the law was written so that you can exempt ordinary reading when reading is as important as it is, I'm not sure I know. But anyway, we have been trying to get the Federal Communications Commission to point out that blind people should not be kept out of access to information on e-reader devices. And I would like you to get information to the Federal Communications Commission saying that if you had the opportunity to read and communicate with e-reading devices, that you would communicate with them, with others, to tell them about what books you'd like to read, with librarians to give you information about what books are available, with other people who are reading books and with whom you would like to communicate so that they know what books are good books. If you could get this information to the FCC, that would be helpful. We've had a number of comments filed with the FCC, but we need to get more of them in. So if you could let the FCC know that you would use Advanced Communications Technology Incorporated in these kinds of e-readers, it would be useful to do. Apparently, my notes here do not have the docket number for the FCC, but you can get a hold of Lauren McLarney and get further information about where to submit comments, or you can send them to her, and then she will send them on to the FCC. The telephone number is the customary one at 410-659-9314, extension 2207. These comments apparently need to be submitted by the 8th of October, so we're in a great hurry to get additional comments in. We have a Technology Education and Accessibility in College and Higher Education Act that we're working on to try to get it into the Congress. Two large groups, one representing institutions of higher education and one representing the software industry, have provided comprehensive feedback to Congressman Petrie's office. Congressman Petrie has expressed a desire to smooth out any potential controversy or roadblocks as best as can be done during the preliminary stages before introduction of the TEACH Act. Now that we have critical feedback on the TEACH language, we are one step closer to getting the bill dropped, and it may be done soon. So if you have questions, you can also get a hold of Lauren McLarney about the TEACH bill. If you want to send in information to Congressman Petri's office, who is from Wisconsin, you can let him know that you support the TEACH legislation. This will give us access to information on college campuses. Since the last presidential release, we have had a grand opening of new facilities at the Louisiana Center for the Blind. I went to our Louisiana Center for the Blind to work with Pam Allen, the director there and also treasurer of the National Federation of the Blind, on the grand opening, and we have 2,500 feet of new space. It is excellent space, and not only did we have the joy of participating in activities in the new space, but we had a great dinner in a new lounge area right outside a new kitchen area. So we demonstrated the value of having this additional space. And the mayor came and was gracious about the comments about how we have helped to contribute to Ruston, Louisiana. And also there were people from all over the United States and some from beyond the borders of the United States who joined in the celebration of the grand opening. Congratulations to Pam Allen and the others who operate our Louisiana Center. I've also been to the 25th anniversary celebration of the Colorado Center for the Blind. Julie Deedon manages our Colorado Center, and she was in considerable evidence there as a person who was managing the celebration of 25 years of success at the Louisiana Center, and there were lots of commentaries about how it was in the early days and how people kept wondering how things would work out and how there was a big snowstorm the first day that students were expected to show up and they slogged through the snow to get to their first classes and other things like that. That was a grand celebration as well. Congratulations to Julie and the others at our Colorado Center for the Blind for 25 years of progress. I've also spent some time on the Google campus out in Mountain View, California. I hope that we're getting a kind of an understanding with Google to make access broader and better than it's been in the past. If we get this done, it will certainly be a significant step forward in equal access to information for the blind in technologies throughout the United States. Ray Kurzweil has come to be Director of Engineering at Google, and he's in the midst of helping to assure that there is accessibility to products and services of Google. I think there is progress happening there. This brings me to the end of the presidential release. We are in the fall season and we're having a lot of conventions. I'll talk about them on a future release, but I think we'll let a few more of them happen before we get that far. David Stayer of New York wonders why we sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game when we're already at the ballpark. Or why do we call them stands when we mostly use them for sitting? And Austin Riccobono says, what did one penny say to the other? The two of us make sense.
The preceding message was brought to you by Mark Maurer, President, National Federation of the Blind, 200 East Wells Street at Jernigan Place, Baltimore, Maryland, 21230.